Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm your host, Bob DeMarco. Coming up, a sheepdog on loan, a few minutes with the great and powerful Doug Ritter, and we take a look at the camp and outdoor knives in my collection. But first, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell. And while you're there, check out our other awesome knife content. We have Thursday Night Knives, our live stream. We have our Sunday interview show, which is always interesting and fun. And then also our knife close-up videos, where I show knives close up under the knife cam over here and just kind of talk. Now, speaking of showing knives under the knife cam and just sort of talking, today's pocket check. Today I have the Spartan Harzy Folder. Spartan Blades. They came on the scene just blazing when they did, and getting Bill Harzy in there to design a number of their signature knives was such a great move because, well, he's a great guy, but he just designs the most beautiful knives. And I feel like whether it's a dagger or a camp knife or a folder or some sort of a tactical combat knife, you can always tell a Bill Harzy knife. And this, of course, is no exception. And I love this knife. Took me a while to get it, gotta say. I was kind of watching everyone else enjoy theirs on YouTube, and then I finally located one, not realizing that sometimes if you just call the company, they might have a few laying around that they could put together for you. So I took my time, found one, and then once I had Curtis Iovito on the show, he offered to engrave my logo on mine. So I sent him the logo. He engraved it in, and now this is just a prize knife, and if you will, kind of a mascot of the show because of that awesome logo engraving. Very, very happy to have this in the collection, and today that's what's riding in my front right pocket. Something else I've been carrying a lot from another great guy, don't you know, is the Ritter RSK, Mini RSK Mark I. This is made by Hoag Knives. And it's sort of a continuation, like the next generation of the Ritter Griptilian. And boy, Hoag Knives really took the ball and ran with it, making the handle a little bit longer and making the steel a little bit better. And if you ask me, their Able Lock, which stands for Ambidextrous Bar Lock Enhanced, really is enhanced. Enhanced version of the Axis Lock. I really like the way this thing operates. And this past weekend, I had a bunch of chores around the house, including hanging two new screen doors, something I've never done before. So I took a long time doing it because I wanted to make sure that I didn't spend all this time and then get it up there and see that it was crooked or see that it jammed in the door jam or anything like that. So this was the knife that was opening all the packages. I did a bit of, well, as you can see, pencil sharpening there. I had this sort of harebrained scheme about how I was going to mark things out. It involved a couple of pencil leads and drilled holes and stuff like that. I ended up scrapping that strategy halfway through. but if it weren't for this knife in my pocket, I never would have even gotten halfway through. I kind of put my common sense hat on and figured out a better way to do it. But anyway, that was the knife I had in my pocket, and I really love that knife, and so I've been carrying it for the last couple of days. That's a back left pocket knife for me due to the size, and man, it's just so handy. I take a look at those two knives, and I just think they make a really, really handsome pair of knives, and I just like looking at them. If you like looking at knives, boy, there's no place in the world like Instagram. I've been posting pictures of my knives up there and also been posting, these audiograms that Jim does. So we'll do an interview show and then Jim distills out three or four like really golden moments from the podcast, gives them to me in these cool little graphic, videos, and I post them on Instagram. So you can kind of keep up with who we have on the show that week. And then in between, you know, I can't help but just, put up these little pictures of my awesome knives. And I'd like them to look as if they're sort of impromptu. Oh, here, this is what I have in my pocket. Like I'm throwing them on the table and just snapping a shot. But you know, I spend a lot of time trying to set them up and look nice. And then I can't resist the filters. So, I'll go through the filters just to make them look dramatic, make it look like I'm a good photographer. So check out the Knife Junkie on Instagram. And I'm not referring to myself in third person there. I'm just saying to find this content on Instagram, you have to go to the Knife Junkie. So Knife Junkie on Instagram for cool knife pictures. All right. Well, I wanted to take this time right here to mention a new patron we have, a new Gentleman Junkie. Gentleman Junkie is our top tier of support on Patreon. And we're really, really quite thrilled to have Clayton Workman with us now. Thank you, Clayton, for supporting us on the Knife Junkie Patreon page. It's how do I say this without sounding corny? It's an honor when people such as yourself, Clayton, are willing to trade money for this content. So thank you for doing so. When you support us on Patreon, that money goes towards helping pay for the different services we need to keep this on the air, whether it's server costs or audio enhancement costs, that kind of thing, so that my golden tones come through exactly how they should. And also, if there's a little leftover fundage there, we'll buy a knife or two and give it away or review it or what have you. So check us out on Patreon. Quickest way to get there is to go to thenifejunkie.com/Patreon. That's thenifejunkie.com/Patreon. Well, we had the honor of having Doug Ritter come on the show. We've talked to him a lot, whether it's on the regular interview show. He's come on the Thursday night live stream. We call it Thursday Night Knives. And he's a great person just to keep up with. Not only did he design this awesome knife I was just showing off, the Mini RSK-1, but he is also the chairman of Knife Rights. That's how a lot of us know him. Also, Knife Rights is it's an organization that has really helped all of us out by changing some antiquated laws in a number of states. And so we had a chance to check in with him. So check it out right here.
The Get Upside app is your way to get cash back on your gas purchases. Get Upside is an app you put on your smartphone, and whenever you need to get gas, search your area for savings, claim your discount, fill up your tank, and then take a picture of the receipt with your phone. And that's it. You've just got cash back. Visit thenifejunkie.com/saveongas to get the app and start saving. Again, that's thenifejunkie.com/saveongas.
Doug, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast.
Always a pleasure.
So you are, Knife Rights is celebrating what? Tell me what's happening with Knife Rights right now.
So we have just this past Sunday celebrated the 15th anniversary of the Wall Street Journal article that basically was the spark that resulted in me founding Knife Rights. That article, how new deadly pocket knives became a $1 billion business, was just a overwrought, sensationalist attack on evil so-called tactical knives that was really designed to inflame public opinion and try to start a movement to try to ban tactical knives in the same way that in the 1950s they banned switchblades in many places. And that was what got me incensed. I realized that there was no aggressive, proactive organization working to keep bad knife laws from being passed or to get rid of all these bad knife laws that had accumulated in the last 100 years after the Civil War and during the 1950s. And yeah, there was no NRA for knife owners. There was no Second Amendment Foundation for knife owners. And that's what persuaded me to start Knife Rights. I realized I was pissed that there was nobody out there working for knife owners, working for knife makers, working for the knife industry to repeal these irrational laws. And, you know, and I founded Knife Rights. And here we are 15 years later. We started out, I coined the term a sharper future. And despite all the naysayers, we have delivered a sharper future. 34 bills enacted in 23 states. I think that's a pretty good record of creating a sharper future.
Well, I know we're all grateful that this guy, Mark Fritz, wrote that ridiculous article. And not for nothing, they put a ridiculous knife as an illustrator. It was just like as an illustration on that article. It's this little carabiner knife. It couldn't look more, it couldn't look less mundane.
But it did fit their criteria. It was a Buck Metro. It was a little cap lifter and a one hand opening lock blade knife with a 1 1/4 inch blade, and that it locked open and that it was able to be opened with one hand was their criteria for this evil tactical knife. It's just ironic that the editor decided to use that knife. It just was perfect to illustrate how ridiculous this whole thing was.
Did you ever get a chance to speak with Mark Fritz, the author of that article?
I haven't. I've avoided poking that bear state. But, you know, less people think this was just from out of left field. It was, I guess, in a manner of speaking. You know, remember that the whole switchblade ban, the Federal Switchblade Act, all the stuff that happened from Hollywood demonizing switchblades all started with a similar article in the Women's Home Companion that was titled "A Toy That Kills." That was all about the evils of switchblade knives in the early 1950s. So an article can start a movement. In this case, it did start a movement. It started knife rights.
What
he was planning for, I'm sure.
Right. What a lovely unintended consequence. So you mentioned that part of the founding of knife rights was the fact that knife owners, knife enthusiasts, and the knife industry didn't have its own sort of NRA. What is knife rights right now weighing in on? Isn't there some Second Amendment thing that you're weighing in on right now?
Actually, there is. You know, if you look at our logo, it says a sharper future top, and at the bottom it says essential tools and essential rights. And despite the fact that we're the only Second Amendment organization that gets support from the left, we are a Second Amendment organization, and we just weighed in with an amicus brief on probably the most critical Second Amendment case to come to the Supreme Court. Certainly, it's the first one they've looked at in 12 years that really talks about the ability to carry an arm outside of the home for self-defense. So either way it goes, it's a historic case. Mm-hmm. And we felt it was only fair for our members and our supporters to weigh in. We joined with the FPC American Victory Fund and a number of state level Second Amendment advocacy organizations to file one of a number of amicus briefs in support of the Second Amendment side of this really, really critical case. I mean, it's not the first time we've done it, but this is the first time in 12 years there's been an opportunity to do so at the Supreme Court.
Right now, as we speak, I happen to be palming your Mark III. I love this knife. You're welcome. You know, I saw that I put up a review video, not a review, I call them close-up videos where I talk about the knives. This has been my outdoor companion since I got it. I love this knife. So I just figured I'd drop that in there. But before, and plus it's a great opportunity just to show off a beautiful knife.
You're
welcome. The Ultimate Steel. Tell us what's going on with the Ultimate Steel and for those who are new, what is it?
So in conjunction with our 15th anniversary, we also launched the tail end bonus drawing portion of our Ultimate Steel Spectacular. The Ultimate Steel is our annual fundraiser. We'll have about $100,000 worth of custom knives, production knives, African safari firearms, gear. It's really an extraordinary opportunity for folks to support us, make a donation, get a chance to win, and since we've launched the tail end bonus, this is an opportunity to win in two separate drawings. It's really the way we fund all this work. You know, all the passion I have doesn't get us anything if we don't have the money to show up at the legislature, to show up in court, to do the things that we do. You know, unfortunately, it takes money to be successful as an advocacy organization. And I am so appreciative of all the custom makers and all the members of industry that have continued to support us with donations, including donations for the Ultimate Steel. Just a great opportunity. Go to kniferights.org, click on the Ultimate Steel, and try not to drool too much over what you could win.
Well, okay, there you heard it. Go support Knife Rights. Go to kniferights.org. Click on the Ultimate Steel. Also, there are a lot of great articles on there and other great resources. Some of the stuff I've really pored over are some of the legal recommendations you have for different situations you might get into with a knife on you. And those are really valuable. So definitely go support kniferights.org. It helps us with this hobby that we love, or these, you know, it helps us keep these tools that we need in our pockets. Doug, thank you so much for coming on Knife Junkie Podcast. I know you're going to be joining us tomorrow night live on Thursday Night Knives, and
be able to
talk to some of the listeners and viewers. Thanks so much for coming on, and thank you for everything you do with Knife Rights. We appreciate it.
I thank you, because I can't do this without folks like you supporting us.
Are you looking for a book about knives or knife collecting, knives and self-defense, or the yearly knife Bible filled with hundreds of pages of information and pictures about your favorite knives? Shop at thenifejunkie.com/books for your traditional favorites, new books about knives, and the yearly knife Bible. Get your favorite knife book and support the show at thenifejunkie.com/books.
It's always great talking with Doug Ritter, and well, of course, this time was no exception. I think when we were rolling, or maybe after, I mean, before we started rolling, I think I invited myself out to his location to do an interview with him in person. So maybe that'll happen sometime in the future. I have a habit of doing that, inviting myself over to people's places. And so I'm going to have to start following up on that threat. So you also have to check out tomorrow night. He's going to be joining us on the live stream Thursday Night Knives. He has promised to come on the show. He's going to come on. So you can actually talk with Doug Ritter tomorrow, whether you come on with come on the show itself by going to thenifejunkie.com/join, or you comment. He will be on the show, and you can talk to him about everything from knife rights, what's happening in your state, because he knows, or talk to him about his awesome knives and his knife designs. So really looking forward to having him on the show. And then also, I just saw a graphic pop up on screen, and it's something that I really need to remind you of, is that we have a lot of cool merch on the website. Merch, if you don't know, is short for merchandise. And we have, just go to thenifejunkie.com/shop. You can get our really cool logo on shirts, t-shirts, mugs, all sorts of stuff, even pillows, which I find weird. But if you need a knifejunkie.com, if you need a Knife Junkie pillow, you can do that. But also, Jim has designed a couple of really cool other bits of artwork that you can get on these t-shirts. Some of them have the tagline, "Don't take dull for an answer." And then some of them have "A man without a knife is a man without a life." Of course, that also translates to women. And then there are lots of other cool things up there. So definitely go to thenifejunkie.com/shop and get some cool merchandise, or merch, as we call it in the business. Now, state of the collection. I want to show you a knife that is not mine, but it's on loan from a great guy. His name is John. You know him as that fellow there, that_fellow_there on Instagram. He's a service member with the military. Thank you for your service, sir, John. And also thank you for loaning me this very cool knife, because I've never experienced this knife, and I've never experienced a knife of the type. And that is the Emerson Sheepdog. And you know, I've experienced plenty of Emersons. It's one of my, you know, very favorite knife brands out there. But when I say the type, I mean, this is the first Emerson flipper I've experienced. And it's been a very eye-opening, that sounds dramatic. It's been really cool to have it and check it out. It's super smooth, and it's on bearings, you know, as you might expect. And, you know, it's so smooth that I kind of had to check this happens with me. When a knife is really smooth, I get suspicious, and then I check if there's blade play or not. And indeed, there is no blade play in either direction, no lock rock, none of that. It is very smooth. I would say that Emerson really nailed the flipper thing. The Sheepdog series was his very first flipper. And I haven't experienced any of the others. Now, he's since done the CQC-7 in a flipper model, the CQC-8 in a flipper model, which looks really cool, incidentally. But this is the first iteration of the flipper. Now, one little issue I have with it is that, and I don't know if this is due to the wear John has put on it, and he is definitely a use-your-stuff kind of guy. When it came to me, the edge was pretty used up, and so I kind of cleaned it up a little bit. I would never presume to do that with anyone's loaner knife, but he suggested. He said, use it, sharpen it, you know, please do what thou wilt with it. So I really, you know, I wanted to clean up that edge. There's nothing I can do about that little chipped off point there, because I'm just not willing to remove that much metal to get it there. Plus, I don't know if my skill levels are there, frankly. I send away my broken tips to Jared Neve. He takes care of that for me. But the one issue I have with this, I will get to in a second, but first I must address the fact that this has this beautiful chocolate brown micarta handle on it. This is canvas micarta. These handle scales were made by Tom Engelson. Tom has a service. You can find him at blades_n_such on Instagram. And he makes scales for Emerson's, I think a few ZTs and Les George knives. But man, I've had him make a couple of scales for my Emerson's, and I just love them. Not only that, but when you get it back, the knife is in better shape, I got to say. But what I was going to say, the one little misgiving I have about this knife, and I'm not sure if it has been addressed in subsequent flipper models like the 7 or the 8 or later versions of the Sheepdog, but in the closed position, I do notice it has a little bit of detent play. And it doesn't really affect much. I mean, I'm not sure if this were my knife, I might take it apart and bend the detent bar, lock bar, in towards the blade a little bit more. I'm not sure why that occurs. It occurs on some knives, like my zero tolerance 0452CF has a little bit of that detent play in the closed position. It doesn't really affect things. It just, you know, if you're going to get real anal retentive about your knives, that could be an issue. Now, to me, it's not much of an issue, but it is something I noticed. And since Emerson Knives is relatively new to the flipper and bearings thing, I figured I'd give them a pass on that. But when it's locked open, it is solid as a rock. So I've been really enjoying this. I'm going to do a close-up video on it. And then with a tear in my eye, send it back to John. I love the Bowie-shaped Emerson knives, and this is a great handle, by the way. The Sheepdog. Now, if I were to get a Sheepdog from Emerson, I would get the Mini, because the Mini Sheepdog looks like really fantastic to me. But also, I'd get the drop point, because it's one of those rare drop points where I just think it looks great. Drop points to me are usually, like I mentioned in the last podcast, a little vanilla. You know, I like something that's a little more exciting. But I don't know, something about that sheep point, sheepdog drop point really does it for me. One quick thing before I move on from this, the only other bearing pivoted Emerson I've experienced is my very own Iron Dragon. This is a really, really awesome and I think quite limited Emerson knife. It's a tribute to Richard Bustillo, who was working with Danny Nosanto in his California Kali Academy back in the day when Emerson was training out there, and Richard Bustillo was his main influence out there. And so this knife, they used to call him the Iron Dragon, and so this knife is a tribute to him. Also very limited, as I mentioned. I got this from Alex from the Knife Box channel, and he gave me a smoking deal on it. Alex, I will always appreciate that, because on bearings, and Emerson is just as awesome as on washers and everything else. So I just wanted to show those two off. Another awesome looking clip point blade made by Emerson Knives. So there you have it. That's all there is for the state of the collection this week. Nothing new has come in this week. I'm trying to be a little disciplined. And while trying to be a little disciplined, I did order something else from the JB Knives. I see that Edwin has something from JB Knives. They do a lot of fixed blade, EDC fixed blade knives that tend towards the tactical. A lot of them tend towards the Pikal style. And they've got this one. It's called the Ditch Pick, I think. Terrible name. Terrible because it evokes a really horrible situation. But the Ditch Pick, double-edged Pikal style knife. And I say double-edged Pikal because you had the option to have the forward edge sharpened. And of course, I had to do that. So I did. Be sure to, if you want to see like liner notes on everything I've talked about thus far and what I'll be talking about afterward, go to thenifejunkie.com/237. That's the number of this episode, and that's the quickest way to kind of get right to the episode and also find the liner notes, if you will. I know they're called show notes, but I like saying liner notes because it reminds me of the old days with the record albums, with the 33s, the LPs. And I know hipsters have their own collections, but you know, that's what we used to get for Christmas. Mom and Dad, I want Pyromania by Def Leppard. And then they'd go and they'd find the LP. They'd go to a record store. They didn't just go to Amazon and they'd buy that for you. So if you want to find the liner notes to this show, go to thenifejunkie.com/237. Okay. So, you know, my tastes tend towards this kind of thing, this kind of tool that I don't really need. But I do really need it in my collection. This is the Randall number 2 model 7. Model 2-7. And the 7 refers to the style of blade, I'm just jacking this all up. The length of blade, 7 inches. And model 2 is a dagger. This is the commando style handle, which someone was kind enough to remind me of in the comments on this video, just this very same day. This is the kind of thing I really like. This is the kind of thing I really collect. But of course, I don't use it. This has a very limited sort of usage. This is a combat knife, and I don't do combat. But thank you to all of you who have done combat and have kept me and my family safe. I greatly appreciate it and honor you whenever I can. So thank you for that. But today we're going to talk about a different kind of knife that there is a preponderance of in my collection, I found out, just in sort of going through them and seeing how many I have. And those are the camp and outdoor knives in my collection. And you might ask, why were you wondering how many camp and outdoor knives you have in your collection? Well, the story begins here with the atrocious state of politics in this country. I've taken a summer break from my usual political podcasts. And, you know, no matter where you come down on politics, if you listen to a political podcast, it's going to get you riled up. No matter what side of the fence you might sit on or no matter what your political persuasion. And you know what? I was like, it's summer. I don't want to be riled up. So I decided, you know, I've always had an interest in the paranormal. I'm going to listen to some paranormal podcasts. Well, I settled on the Sasquatch Chronicles. It's a podcast I love. And before you start to snicker, you might want to give it a listen. It's rather interesting. It's an interview show and people come on and give their encounters with strange things in the woods. And let me tell you, as an art major and as a guy who knew a lot of theater majors and a lot of actors, good acting is a very, very hard skill to develop. And I have come to the point of view that these people who come on this podcast and tell their stories of seeing weird things in the woods are not acting. I can tell from their voices, they did not go to acting school. And I can tell from their accounts, they've experienced something. Now, whether it's whether it's a mass delusion or something, I can't determine. But the people who have come on this podcast are relating real experiences. And I would say 80% of them are hunters. And they're always setting up their story about going out in the woods. And being someone who's lived in the city and now in the suburbs very close to the city for the last 30 years or 25 years, I pine for a life further away from the city, let's put it that way. Not that I want to live in the woods, but I have a sort of romantic notion about retiring to the country. And, when I was an art student back in the day around all those actors, I spent a lot of time in the woods and did a lot of artwork based on nature. And I kind of miss that. So listening to these people recount their weird experiences in the woods has gotten me to think about camping a lot this summer. Have I done any camping this summer? No. I think I'm going to go in the fall with a good friend of mine, and he's got all the equipment I'll borrow or leech off of in any case. And but I can bring the knives. That's for sure. I can bring the camping knives. And so I want to show you what I've got here because I got some pretty cool ones, I realize. All right. That's a long setup, and please excuse me and don't think that I'm an absolute nut job. I'm sure you think I'm somewhat of a nut job, but don't let that intro color your view of me. All right, the first knife I'm going to show off here is a true classic. I'm going to start with some of the classic knives and then move up to some of the more modern camp knives. But this is the Mora Classic 611. This is a Swedish knife. You know, Mora knife comes from Sweden. And this is a true classic. I mean, just look at this handle. It's very unmodern. Now, Mora has a lot of very modern knives with the plastic and rubberized handles and the coated blades. This is an uncoated carbon steel blade. You can see I've used this quite a bit, mostly actually in this room doing shop kind of stuff. I've used this to carve out kydex. I've used this to shape wood for shims and other kind of stuff. I mean, sharpened pencils, all sorts of stuff. But this is a classic outdoors knife with this, I think it's a beechwood handle. And could have done the research on that. I know that's what people are saying. But it's a wooden handle painted red. And it's got the single quillion guard. They have one with a double quillion guard. They have one with no guard. I figured for a knife like this, you probably want to have your thumb here to power through things like wood, but you also probably want to have at least one guard down on the bottom stopping you from running up on this very sharp Scandinavian edge blade or Scandi edge blade. Scandi edge blade, if you don't know, is a zero ground blade, which means that the bevel itself is the cutting edge. It's not like a regular knife or a usual. Neither of those terms are correct, but it's not like a knife like this that has a bevel and then it has a final cutting edge down here. This bevel is the cutting edge. It gets a knife very, very sharp and robust, great for woodland type tasks, especially like carving and whittling wood. I got this one quite a while back. It's got a plastic sheath and this hangs on the pegboard of my shop here because that's where I tend to use it a lot. I say shop, that's a glorified term. This is a small den or man cave, and I have a little tool section with a drill, a drill press and all my stuff kind of over against the wall. And this hangs there because it is a very, very useful knife. And I think it would be a great backpacking knife because it's very light. All right, next is another classic. Now, this one was a gift to me from a wife's cousin's husband. And I wasn't expecting a gift. It was on my 46th birthday, I believe. And I'm so happy to have this knife because I love it. I've always loved it. This is one of those knives that when I was a kid, I would gawk at in the hardware store. And it's a $119 fixed blade. It's got that classic, just classic, beautiful clip point blade with the fuller in it and the deep hollow grind, the cutting edge here. And the clip, it's just, I mean, this is a classic knife. You look at this and this says, screams outdoor camp hunting knife. This was one of the first designs developed by Buck Knives. And this version has the phenolic handle, this sort of plasticky handle, and the 420 HC steel. Over the past year, I believe it was 2020, they came out with their elite versions of these, which have the S35VN blade and green canvas micarta handles. They are just knockout, man. They are beautiful. I'd love to get one of those, but since I have this one, it kind of scratches my buck 119 itch. Of course, I would accept it happily as a gift. But I think the gift giving on this one has been done. One thing I've always found interesting about this design is how wide the handle is. The handle comes to the same width. It's a very girthy handle, comes to the same width as the guard, something you don't see often. I used to think it was too much. Now I don't think my hand has grown, but now it feels, you know, really, really comfortable in hand. And I can see why they did that, because, it really fills the hand nicely. And if your hand is larger than mine, which probably 50% of you out there, your hand is larger than mine, this is a very, very nice and hand-filling knife. And if you're using this to dress large game or something like that, and I don't mean put a tie and coat on it, but open it up and pull its guts out, you might want something girthy like this, because the handle is slick. The material is slick there. So just a classic. I love this knife. And leave a comment. Let me know, or you can call the listener line, 724-466-4487. And let me know, what was the movie, the horror movie, that featured this in the poster? It was like hanging down by the waist and down by the side of a killer. Was it Jason Voorhees that used one of these, or was it one of the Halloween movies? I don't know, don't remember. But I do know that that blade was featured in a horror movie poster. So let me know. Okay, another classic, made by a modern company, but it's a classic knife, is the Condor Hudson Bay knife. Condor Knives is a company that started and is down in El Salvador, started as a machete company and an outdoor knife company, and that's still what they specialize in. In the past few years, they've had Joe Flowers, a acclaimed outdoorsman and knife designer, designing a lot of their knives. But this one is taken from the Hudson Bay knife. Now, the Hudson Bay knife has a cool history. The Hudson Bay company originally was a Canadian fur trading company and other products. But they had a whole legion of fur traders out there in the West and up north and in Canada. And think of the movie The Revenant, basically. This is when this knife was developed for the Hudson Bay Knife Company. It was produced by a Sheffield cutler called Carlson and Jukes, Coulson and Jukes Company, or Jukes and Coulson Knife Company in Sheffield, England. And the whole concept behind this was it was a do everything knife. So you could dress out large game with this buffalo or elk. You know, you got this giant blade to do all that sort of work, but also could take care of all your camp chores. And this large 8.5 to 9 inch bladed knife would be kept on the belt and would preclude the need for a belt axe. So they could use this to split wood and do all sorts of camp chores, as well as take care of their skinning tasks and such. Very interesting history. Also, there were two grades of this knife. There was one that had the three pins, like this Condor version. And then there was one that called the Chief's grade, that had a bolster here, and then two pins. And then the two pins had washers around them. Actually, I think all versions of them had the washers around the pins, but the Chief's version had the two pins. And so that would have a big metal footprint here on the handle. And the Indians at the time would call it the knife with eyes, which I think is so cool, the knife with eyes. So a little interesting tidbit of history here. I love the Condor company. I have more than I thought. I have five Condor knives. And they're all really cool, very stoutly built. This one with the sort of hammer style is an interesting look. This was a gift from my good friend Kurt, and I used that knife to chop down, like, I don't know, 8 big, gnarly, prickery bushes we had in the back before we put on an addition. And so that knife has seen some use, some real use, and I love it. I'd love to get the Bark River Knives Hudson Bay. They make a Hudson Bay in the Chiefs sort of pattern. So Hudson Bay knife, there you go. Next is also an outdoor kind of classic. I mean, it's becoming a modern classic, let's put it that way. This is the SRK Survival Rescue Knife from Cold Steel in its molded, Grivex, or I don't remember what they call their version of the injection molded sheath, but it's in a plastic sheath that works very well. It's a clip point, 6.5 inch. Let's see, what is this? 1, 2, 3. Oh, man. 1. Stage fright here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, it's a 6.25, 6.5 inch blade with the I can never remember what they call this either. Their rubberized handle, Kraton handle, with the knurling pattern in there. And this is with the carbon V steel. So this is the least expensive version of this knife. I got this in 2006 when my wife, who was at the time my fiance, went to London to open up an office over there for the company she was working for. I built her this whole, bug out bag. And this was the knife I put in there. I'm quite sure this was not UK legal, but I put it in there anyway and sent it through the mail to her. And so that she would have this in case something happened in London and she had to bug out into the countryside there, she'd have a capable knife. So that was, you know, quite a while ago, and I guess 14, 15 years ago now. And this knife has never seen any use. Thank God, because it's been in her bug out bag all this time. And recently, oddly enough, made its way into my collection case. I figured, you know, we haven't, and now that we have a house, you know, we used to live in New York and having a bug out bag was essential to living in the city. Now, if we had to bug out, we'd have a few minutes to get our stuff together and throw it in the car. So I kind of took this out of the bug out bag, leaving only a couple of other knives in there. So the SRK, cool thing about this knife is that it could be a combat knife. You know, this would be a great all-arounder, I think, for someone in the service, because it's a nice thick blade, but not too thick. It's got a nice swedge on there. You could easily sharpen if you wanted to, you know, to get a nice oblique kind of fighting edge on the swedge there, if that were interesting to you. But also, I mean, just a great and capable survival knife. It's got this nice, generous ricasso area. You can really choke up on the knife like this as if there were a choil there and put the guard between your first two fingers there and use it like this. So this really is kind of a combat, camp, all-arounder fixed blade knife. And that carbon V is nicely coated, and It's not that spray paint coat they used to put on some of their knives back in the early days, in the 90s. It's a really stout kind of coating. So that knife is it's a great one, great all around outdoor knife. Next is one that I've used quite a bit in the back 40. That's 40 yards by 40 yards, and that is my Topps Knives Tex Creek in this beautiful pouch sheath. I love this sheath. I made a Kydex sheath, a very good one, actually, because I thought when I initially bought this, I thought this was going to be an in-the-waistband EDC. It ended up being big and heavy for that purpose. So I just kind of have stuck with this pouch style because it's way more convenient when you're out, you know, noodling around in the back, cutting vines, cutting saplings, doing whatever, using this knife to just pull it out and drop it in, pull it out, drop it in. So I've really grown to love this beautiful leather pouch sheath, double stitched, etc. But this isn't about the sheath. This is about the knife, Tex Creek. And they also have a Tex Creek XL, which I've always been kind of interested in, never pulled the trigger on. Looks just like a bigger version of this. But this is a great saber ground knife here. This is 1095 with the acid rain. Is this that? The acid rain finish, maybe? Ooh, I see a little red rust right there. Better get to that. But it's got a nice coating, has never really shown much rust, but I do see it happening right there a little bit. I'm not sure why, because I haven't used this one in a while. But you've got micarta handles nicely contoured when you look at it from this aspect, its dorsal or pectoral aspect. It's got nice jimping back on the back of the handle, an excellent jimping right up here, especially if your hands are gloved. This works really well because those jimps are, you know, kind of generous, larger, kind of tops style jimping, and that grips the gloves really nicely. As you can see, maybe you can see, I'm not sure, I've resharpened this a number of times because with the lanyard here, if you kind of, well, there are different ways to hold it. I like to hold the lanyard like this, and you can get some pretty nice chopping action out of this. Light chopping, of course. But the quarter inch blade is just heavy enough to get a little bit of chop in there. I mean, it is distal tapered, so it's not super, super heavy. Actually, it's not distal tapered, but with the swedge and the saber grind here up towards the front, it kind of has that appearance and effect. So it's a light enough knife, but you can get some good chopping here. Anyway, my point is I've hit the chain link fence. We used to have a chain link fence that runs along. It's been replaced now, but I've divoted out some little notches on this and had to sharpen it out. And that 1095, it's nice and tough. It stays nice and sharp. But when you do something stupid and you hit a rock or you hit chain link fence or something and you knock a little piece out, it sharpens up really quickly. So this was my outdoor knife for a few years. Now I'm trying out some other ones, which I'll show you in a minute or two. So love the Tex Creek. It'll always have a fond place in my heart. It'll always occupy a warm place in my heart. You know what I mean. I like it. All right, next. We have two. This is another company that I was like, oh, man, I do have quite a few fixed blades from this company. And that company is Spyderco. I have five fixed blade Spyderco knives. And these two were both gifts from my brother-in-law for Christmas or birthdays along the way. And it's great because my brother-in-law always gets me a knife as a gift, and I love it. And he always gets me something that I end up loving that I never would have thought to get myself. And the first one is the Temperance 2 by Spyderco. And it comes, again, in a beautiful leather pouch-style sheath. Just a stout, beautiful chocolate brown sheath. And it's kind of water molded to the blade itself, or to the knife and the knife handle. And the knife itself is a VG10 full flat ground. This is distal tapered. That's something they brag about here, so I'll show it off. Knife here, full tang knife with bead blasted micarta handles, also in this sort of lovely chocolate brown canvas micarta with two pins there. And it, one of the most just hand-pleasing knives ever. It feels so good in hand. Everything from the feel of the material, this micarta just has a sumptuous feel, to the sort of Coke bottle handle. When you look at it again from its dorsal aspect, it's got a Coke bottle shape, and then just this very pleasing forward and back fore and aft finger swale with the bird's beak here. It just feels great. And then it's capped off by this awesome thumb ramp here. Fully flat ground VG10 that is just sharp as all get out. And to me, this knife is another one of those knives that could flex. I mean, this could actually, you know, probably be a pretty wicked knife if you needed it in a sort of tactical, way. You know, if you needed to fight with it, let's say. This would be awesome because it's very slicey, very pointy, feels great in hand, and has an excellent, as Nut and Fancy would say, excellent traction plan in that you're not riding up on that blade. You've got the finger guard here. You've got the thumb ramp here, which has awesome jimping. So if you needed it for that, it would be great. But I think that this is much more of a camp knife. I don't know. Let me know what you think. You don't see much about the Temperance, too. At least I haven't. So I'm curious what people use this for themselves. But from the sheath and from the shininess of it, I would say that this is more of a camp knife. Something Spyderco does that kind of makes me chuckle, they have to put that circle in everywhere because it is their trademark. And in some places, like on the Oh, what is it? I've been going off about it recently. It's one folding knife that I really like. It looks kind of like the Emerson CQC8, but they put the hole in there and I'm like, you didn't need to do that. Just didn't need to do that. Over designs it a little bit. But on this knife, I think it looks awesome. And I love the old school, writing here. Spyderco. I think this is a Taiwan made, Japan. This is made in Japan. Usually you see that, that print, that Spyderco font on the Taiwan knives. Interesting thing here. It looks like they kind of forgot to smooth this out a little notch there. But in any case, love this knife. Thank you, James. He has gotten me, just like my brother-in-law, who, well, he is my brother now, and has been for the last 13 years, but he has gotten me some really, really awesome knives. And that's one of them. The next one is another, fixed blade Spyderco that, James got me that I didn't think about. And then he got it for me. And I'm like, man, this is cool. I've done a video on this one, out in the woods with my daughter. This is the Spyderco Serrata, designed by custom knife maker Ackerman. Actually, I don't remember what his first name is. Comes in this Bolteron sheath here. And as usual with Spydercos, it has a very generous, generous profile here. You know, if I cared to, I could trim down all the way around here. But excellent. I love this clip attachment that they have. But here's the knife. This is cast 440C. So you don't hear of casting knives too often. So cast 440C. And apparently the casting makes this 440C very tough and also very edge retentive, if that's a term. And I think it just looks great. And Serrata, to me, evokes Escrima. You know, there's a type of Escrima called Serrata Escrima. But I do not see this as a fighting knife. You could, of course, you could fight with any knife. But if you look here, there's not much in the way to stop you from coming up on the handle if you were to thrust with this. So this is not intended for that kind of knife. This is a camp knife. And if you look at it again from the dorsal view, you can see how wide it is at the handle. This is not a lightweight knife at all. But you can see how it tapers towards the tip. There's a nice distal taper, reduces weight, and also reduces drag as you're cutting through stuff. And if you do have to puncture with it, it reduces any sort of puncture drag. Again, you'll see on this blade, their signature circular hole, round hole there. Spyderco is, they're such ballers. They have a patent on the circle. Love that. G10 handle scales are nicely contoured, again, in a Coke bottle fashion. This just feels sumptuous in hand. And here you go. Here is a knife maker Ackerman's Maker's Mark. Cool with the tomahawk there. Again, sorry, I did my research before, but I'm spacing on who Ackerman is. His first name is Stuart Ackerman. Okay. Nice pins. I just love the look of this knife. I have used it a couple of times, just electively in going out and seeing how it performed. There's a video somewhere on my channel of me and my daughter out in our favorite spot in the woods. And I'm pounding it through something or pounding it into something. Great knife. All right. So far we have the Mora Classic 611. We have the Buck 119. We have the Condor Hudson Bay knife. We have the Cold Steel SRK, the Tex Creek by Topps Knives. We have the Spyderco. I always forget the name of this knife. The Spyderco Temperance 2 and then the Spyderco Serrata. Next. One that I was talking about quite a bit recently, the Bark River Knives Boon 2. To me, this is just the classic American belt knife, 19th century, early 20th century classic belt knife for camping and hunting and all things outdoors. Sort of a precursor to the K-Bar is this design. And not for nothing, but they, Bark River Knives does make incredible sheaths. And a little feature that I love is how when you unclip it, they have a little extra tab on the leather back here, and you can stick the strap behind there. So when you pull it out and put it back in, if you're using it a lot, you're not cutting the strap. Beautiful sheath. But here is the knife. So this is the CPM 3V version. So very tough, gets very, very sharp. I think that's a blemish there. I might have to, I think I might have to oil this knife and kind of work that little blemish out. But this classic clip point blade with the big fuller here to lighten things up also gives a little bit of structural rigidity, kind of in the style of an I-beam in a building. It's got aluminum guards. This knife you can get with just one guard like that. If you find yourself in this position a lot and you don't want, with your thumb on the back of the blade and you don't want this poking into your thumb, I don't find it to be a problem. But then again, I haven't really used it in this fashion much. But you can get it single guarded. You can get, because it's a Bark River knife, you can get it with a million different handles, all sorts of exotic woods, micartas. And this is the, this is the black stacked leather. I just wanted this in stacked leather because to me, it really evokes what I was going for in buying this knife, which is that classic American camp knife from times gone by. Really nice, pommel there. Also aluminum. Not sure if you would want a hammer with that pommel, but it looks like it's set up for that. I guess you could pound in tent stakes and stuff like that if you were pounding on something with a generous surface area, but that is where they screw the tang to the handle, or, build the handle around. There's the screw tang there, and it is aluminum, so you don't want to do too much heavy pounding with it. But I've been using this one outside, kind of trying this out a lot. Most of my Bark River knives are not used, like the two giant Bowies I have just kind of sit there in the cabinet. They're safe queens, if you will, and I don't want anything to happen to them, but I really wanted this to be a use knife. So I use this outside these days, this, the Tex Creek, and then one that's coming up, or two that's coming. I mean, I can never just settle on one. So I'll go out with one on my belt and then I'll have another one near me and I'll switch around. The only thing they really see are vines and saplings, but still, we got to do something. I'm not going to use shears. I'm not going to go out there with shears. Okay, so this is the Bark River Buntu in CPM 3V with the stacked leather handle, blackened leather handle. Just a classic, man. I love the way it looks just looking at it right there. Just a nice looking knife. Next comes to me from a new knife maker, an outfitter from Newfoundland, Canada. The Newfoundland Knives Ranger. I've been talking about this one a lot recently. Nice stout leather sheath. This knife is Cerakoted in red, as you can see, made by Millet Knives in D2. Quite a thin blade stock here. And this contoured and polished wood handle. I've taken this out quite a bit, doing a lot of the same stuff with it that I do with the other knives. Carving out saplings, chopping down saplings, and devining things. It is very sharp, very, very sharp, and a nice thin knife. A lot of these knives are a bit thicker. This one has remained nice and thin. I mean, not remained nice and thin, but it is nice and thin and quite tough. And the Cerakoting protects that D2 steel, that tool steel. This is made, as I mentioned, by Millet Knives, and is just a great knife. I'm really looking forward to seeing what John over there at Newfoundland Knife Company, I'm looking forward to seeing the knives he's coming up with. He has gotten quite a bit of knives coming out. I've been seeing him prototyping things. You can see him on Instagram, and the prototype knives look great. And I know that Millet Knives, who you're going to see interviews with, an interview with quite soon. I know that they're going to be building another one of his knives and are quite excited about that relationship. You can find them on Instagram and see what they're coming up with. This knife, if red isn't your thing, this knife comes in other Cerakotes, gray and black, I believe. The red, by the way, is very nice if you're going to be setting it down in the woods. It's going to be easily found. Let's put it that way. Unless it's autumn, then who knows? Maybe it'll blend in with all the leaves. Okay. Three more here. Stick with me. You're going to love these. Oh my gosh. All right. The next one, you've seen me showing off recently. That is the Off Grid Knives Grizzly. comes in a nice Kydex sheath. This is marketed and designed as a camp kitchen knife. And I haven't used it at camp, but I have used it in the kitchen. And it is awesome. It is awesome at the kitchen knife role. Now, if you look at it, it's got a long straight section and then a bit of a belly up front towards the tip. And this acts as a cleaver. You know, it's great as a cleaver, but you also have, with this belly, good cutting, pull cutting capabilities here. Like if you're, cutting up chicken or something like that, you know, and I don't know, maybe in hunting, but like I say over and over, I've never gone hunting, never, dressed an animal like that. So I don't know, but that curve definitely helps in cutting meat in the kitchen. Anyway, another thing I love about this nice thin blade stock with jimping, like the handle itself is kind of tactical, kind of kitcheny, and you got that jimping there. How many kitchen knives do you have with jimping? Exactly. But the width, this is a 2-inch wide blade and very broad, very high grind, thin blade stock. It is very thin behind the edge. Very, very slicey. And then all of this surface area here on this wide blade is great for scooping up ingredients to get to the pan. So you chop, 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 scoop it up onto the blade, drop it in the pan. So this is a very well thought out knife. This is OS 8A. So a great kitchen knife steel, by the way, because it hones up really easily, gets a wicked sharp edge, and is stainless. And in this case, coated. So it's kind of double stainless. So excellent knife. I love my off-grid knives, Grizzly. And actually, we have an affiliate link with them. So if you feel like buying an off-grid knife or this off-grid Grizzly knife, you might think about buying it through our affiliate link. All that means is we get a tiny portion of that sale back from off-grid. So it's a nice, nice little deal. So check that out. Yeah, I dig their knives so much, and I've grown my collection quite a bit. And Carrie offered that to me, and I said, yeah, let's take it. So try our affiliate link. You'll be glad you did. So will I. All right. Second to last is, I'm going to do that one last. No, I'm just going to do it now. This is the Doug Ritter RSK, and all of his knives are RSK. RSK stands for Ritter Survival Knife. This is the Mark III. The Mark III is just, love it. So first of all, it comes in the one nylon sheath that I have that I actually really dig. This nylon sheath, as you can see, has the straps on the back with double snaps. You can snap it here or snap it here. So it you can put it on your belt, straddling a belt loop so that it won't move around. But you can put it on without taking your belt off. This also, I think, is MOLLE compatible, maybe. I think that's what the double snaps are for. Comes with this nice length of 550 paracord and a really, really stout plastic shell on the inside that is very, very tough. So it's not going to poke through that. The blade is not going to poke through that sheath at all. And you've got this nice plastic run here so that when you resheath it, you're not gouging your sheath. This I've done a lot on recently is a very, very good outdoor knife. It's very light and it's S45VN, which is new to me. And it's got a very high saber grind, extremely slicey. I would imagine that this would be a great backpacker knife. If you're backpacking and hiking for hours and hours and hours on end, and you want a capable fixed blade on you, I think this is the one. It's got a nice 5.5-inch blade. Five and a quarter, I think. And it's very light, very slicey. You could do a lot with it. You could puncture with it, but you've got this long, straight portion of the blade you can do all sorts of stuff with. It's got a nicely contoured G10 handle with that radiant pattern milling that you see on the famous folders that he makes. So just an outstanding knife. This would be my pick for hiking and taking a fixed blade hiking for long distances because it's not going to weigh you down. But man alive, is it a capable knife. All right, lastly, but not leastly, of course, is the Ontario Artec 2, sort of the precursor to the Hunglis. I have this in an aftermarket, can't remember who made this now, but Nuttin' Fancy recommended it back in the day, aftermarket Kydex sheath, and this thing is just a beast. Just a giant long 10-inch 1095 blade, and even a just a giant handle too. That kind of very hand-filling handle. And by the way, that size of that handle seems to absorb shock when you use this as a chopper or a batoner. This is an excellent batoning knife, excellent chopping knife. It's got a full flat ground wedge-shaped blade in cross-section and is just tough as hell. I mean, and a funny story. I don't know if my brother thinks it's funny, but he was chopping wood with his. I think he's got the Hunglis and looks just like this thing. And it deflected off of a piece of wood and buried itself in his cap. I'm not laughing because I'm laughing because I've done some, made some big mistakes with knives. And this brought him to the emergency room, and many stitches later, he had a story to tell. I think it involved a bear when he told the story. But in any case, the Artak II is just a classic camp knife and definitely on the large side. So here you have it. I like the way it looks with that purple fob next to that natural tan canvas micarta. All right, there's the lineup. I hope you've enjoyed this cataloging of my camp and outdoor knives. I realized that tactical isn't the only thing I love. I love these outdoor knives. I love them all, you know. And but a lot of it just comes down to taste. And if I had my druthers, I'd have a lot more of this style knife. And by this, I mean this kind of tactical daggery knife. But what a pleasure to have real, usable, everyday kind of big fixed blade knives. All right. Well, that about does it. I think I've talked long enough about this awesome variety of knives. So happy that we could have Doug Ritter come on the show and tell us about the 15th anniversary of Knife Rights and the Ultimate Steel and all the other good stuff they're doing. It's always a pleasure. Be sure to join us tomorrow night on Thursday Night Knives. That's live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook to talk with Doug and to hear what he's got to say. Please join the conversation. Go to theknifejunkie.com/join. Set the phone up aimed right at yourself. Put your head earbuds in and come meet me. I'd love to meet you. If you can't swing that, comment, and we'll address your comments right there on camera. So for Jim working his magic behind the switcher, I am Bob DeMarco saying thanks again and see you next time. And don't take dull for an answer.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487 and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.